Pacific Rim, the final Fortnite showdown, and more coming up on today's episode of Lays and Tech News. Hey, Gadgeteer, you're just in time for the latest episode of the world's only 3-in-1 show on tech, gadgets, and gaming news. That's right, this is Lays and Tech News. My name is Taylor Merrick, and if you're new here, hit that subscribe button right now so that you don't miss out on the latest news. We do this on the daily, except for Saturday and Sunday. Obviously, you have to take a break sometime, hang outside, hang out with family and friends, if you know what I'm talking about. And if you're listening via the podcast, don't forget to head on over to podcastawards.com and nominate this show for an award. We are wrapping up the final days here. Nomination period closes the end of July. Registration is free. We are listed under the technology category, so if you could take a couple minutes of your time, nominate this show for an award, that would be greatly appreciated. The voting slate opens up mid-August, so obviously there's going to be a couple weeks after the nominations close, so obviously get your nominations in now so that voting can happen, obviously, in mid-August. And if you're watching the show on YouTube, hi, I just waved right now to you. Audio listeners have no idea what the heck's going on. Is there video? Yes, there is. There's video, there's pictures, moving graphics, everything that goes along with this. And with that, usually people comment when they see the video, they're like, wow, you look a lot taller when I was listening to the podcast. I'm like, well, thanks. I'm not sure what that's supposed to mean, but okay. I don't know. It varies. It depends on whoever's listening, I guess. But if you're watching via YouTube, hit the like button when you get to a part of the show that we like. Speaking of what's to like, oh man, Fortnite news. I got a couple articles for you, namely the final showdown that happened over the weekend. Ironically enough, that happened also on the same day that the 50th anniversary of the moon landing happened as well. I got an interesting gadget to be showing off in that segment, as well as we'll be taking a look at Apple being in advanced talks to buy Intel's smartphone modem chip business, the Asus ROG Phone 2. We'll also be taking a look at, well, Apple bringing walkie-talkie back to the Apple Watch, and we'll be taking a look at the new hero set to be unveiled shortly in Overwatch. You're just trying to debate which kind of character it's going to be. He looks like an evil overlord, but he doesn't have a big blue head, and so we're trying to figure out what's going on with him, and he's not as crazy. We have a mad scientist. His name is Junkrat, but we'll get more into that. But first, did you know that Steve Wozniak, the co-founder of Apple, his favorite game was Tetris? Well, that's not all. Did you know that so much so he submitted his high scores to Nintendo Power so many times that he got fed up with it and they refused to print his scores, so he started sending them under another name? Can anybody guess what that name was? No? Well, it was Yvetz Kainzow, the reverse of his name, and I guess he lives on forever in the Tetris Hall of Fame. Loved Tetris. I guess that was the only thing you could do to, like, just say, I gotta take a break from something, building computers, and play Tetris. Yeah, favorite video game ever. Speaking of, what's your favorite video game? Post below down in the comment section. Would love to hear what you guys are thinking. With that taken care of, let's take a look at what happened today in tech history. All right, today is July 22nd. 2019. On this day in history, in 1997, Apple announces OS 8. Yeah, 8. For those of you who don't know, it was an important move at the time when Apple's upper level management and profits were experiencing significant problems. The new operating system offered new features such as easier integration of the internet and a three-dimensional look. Immediately after the announcement, the software earned positive reviews from users, although it was not expected to end Apple's financial troubles as it faced growing competition from improvements in the Windows operating system by Microsoft used on IBM compatible PCs. Also, on this day in history, well, in 1980, representatives from an IBM facility in Boca Raton, Florida, where a small group of engineers were secretly developing the IBM PC, meet with Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer of Microsoft to discuss licensing software and an operating system for the still-developing PC. Not having an operating system to offer IBM, Microsoft will eventually buy the rights to QDOS, or the 86DOS, from Seattle Computing Products, which they in turn licensed to IBM as PCDOS, you see what you did there, and later licensed to PC clone makers as MS-DOS. This alliance between IBM and Microsoft forms one of the most dominant platforms in the history of computing, which goes on to crush nearly all other PC platforms in the 80s and 90s, and Apple had a lot of problems going on with this, even into the late 90s. Ironically, this platform nearly crushes IBM itself as they lost control of the platform to PC clone makers and Microsoft. One could say they pulled a Ray Kroc, as it were, almost left them burning with $1 million apiece and their sole remaining hamburger stand. But I digress. We actually have to get into the tech news. This isn't a food show. As much as you like food, you probably hate McDonald's. So let's head on over to today's feature story. All right. So did you guys watch the final showdown? I did. I'm raising my hand right now. I did. My wife did. She was in game for the match. Watched the whole entire thing. And I couldn't understand a word she was saying on the phone because she was squeaking, she was happy, and she was yelling, and I was jumping up and down going, what the heck's going on? What the heck's going on? And then I tuned over and watched Ninja and Tim Tatman, a bunch of other people. And they were all essentially doing the same thing, except Ninja was a little bit funnier. He was going around going, what the what? What the what? And then somebody said, Avengers Assemble! And then just kind of like ruined the whole thing for me, because you want to know what? I was watching it going, this is a fight between... Well, guess what? This is Pacific Rim, like 2.0, like in Fortnite. Like, did you guys not see the comparison? Like, the monster, people call it Caddis. Still have no idea what the heck it actually is. So I'd liken it to a kaiju of sorts. And then obviously the robot was obviously a bear. I don't know why they called it a dog or cat or something. It was a bear. It was a robot bear. Just like the skin, the Soul Commander. Teddy Bear Commander skin in Fortnite from earlier, just with like a different couple of pieces swapped on and out. It kind of looked like a Mighty Morphin Power Rangers like set when all the Power Rangers jumped into their out spacecraft floating airplane ship thing and then like morphed together into this big huge robot of sorts. It didn't do any of that, but you know, it's what the skin looked like and what this robot was called in Pacific Rim was Jaeger. So as far as I was concerned, especially right near the ending piece, and you guys know what I'm talking about if you watched it, I'm like, this is exactly what happened to the Jaeger. It's so typical. Well, talk about a battle for the ages. No, we're not talking about the events taking place at the Open Championship or 40-year-old boxing legend Manny Pacquiao delivering 30-year-old Keith Thurman his first defeat to claim the WBA super welterweight title. All of this might be exciting stuff for sure, but that's real life stuff. This is video game stuff. This is so much more important. But Fortnite Season 9, the final showdown, the final recap on everything that was Season 9 before we morph into Season 10 set to happen within the next couple days, well, came down between a larger-than-life robot and an equally big monster delivered on the hype and anticipation. Live event took place kicking off at, well, 2 p.m. Eastern. Leading up to the event, Fortnite players saw the construction of the pink robot called Caddis piece by piece throughout the season at the pressure plant. Meanwhile, the monster called Doggus, sorry I flip-flopped the names, I couldn't tell, started off trapped at Polar Peak. You could only see his eye at the time, you heard this weird whimpering things. He would later emerge with Polar Peak on his back, biding his time in the sea around the island. It all came to a head yesterday, well, Saturday, when Doggus finally came ashore. Fortunately for anyone who missed what actually happened, and if you haven't seen it by now, there is actually a link in the show notes to this article. You can go ahead and click on it, and you can actually watch the entire thing. You don't have to worry about people commentating, Ninja saying anything, me saying anything. It's actually just the event itself, all the music, everything that goes along with it. It's an aerial view, so you probably get one of the best views that there is. So that link can be found at TechNewsGadget.com Onlookers.net, but yeah. Dead set on destruction, Onlookers watched as Daugus marched across the island and began laying waste to the vault. Catus would have had none of it, though, and fired off a dozen rockets at the beast. Catus flailed about as they made contact, but the gift of flying explosive, well, mostly just ticked him off. He showed this by going full-on Godzilla and spewing something nasty and potentially toxic, perhaps a radiation beam, at Catus, knocking the robot over. Catus got up and charged Daugus, performing a tackle that would make Bobby Boucher Jr., well, the water boy, proud as the two landed and disappeared into the sea. Shortly after, Catus flies out of the water and lands on a mountaintop as victory music plays in the background. The end, right? Wrong. Well, we've watched enough superhero movies or Pacific Rim to know that the first ending is not the real one, and such was the case here. So, finishing off the fight, Catus lifts up a sword. I skipped over a big important part. You'd have to watch the video to find out. Catus lifts up a sword and plunges it through the monster's skull and into the earth. Sort of like setting up a tent, only much more violent and, well, with a sword. Really, nothing like a tent. Forget that was ever mentioned. A celebratory floss dance ensues. This is Fortnite, after all, and thus ends the battle. Of course, keep in mind, one soul robot has only one arm, so this is the one-armed floss. Ironically, they brought it out as an emote. Catus then flies into the sky and out of view. So, what, if any, consequences or things carrying over do you see happening into Season 10? I can tell you, for starters, the skeleton is going to be there in the middle of where the beast died, and the sword is going to remain there impaled into the head of the monster, and of course there's chests that are going to be on top of it. I don't think you can knock it down. I think it's just something you have to fly up on. Ironically, this is the perfect moment that Fortnite used to bring back the jetpack. So that was awesome. Were you guys present for the event? Did you watch it? What did you think? Good, bad, or otherwise? Actually, while you're at it, who were you voting for? It seemed like Ninja had a problem switching between the monster or the robot. And then after it looked like the monster was going to win, he switched his vote. And then they said, you can't switch it. So he switched it back. And then he said, I'm going to switch it again. And that didn't work out. So he said, forget it. I'm going to go back, you know, with the robot. I want the robot to win. And then the robot won. And everybody was like, ugh. And I kind of knew that the robot was going to win the entire time. I didn't buy the emote to go along with it. I was actually at work at the time. But I was able to carve out a little break time to actually watch the entire event live. And man, it was awesome. I liked it. I really like what Fortnite and Epic Games does in terms of having a live event go on all of the servers at the same time in real time. It makes the community that much better, for one, and a lot of fun to be around, to be in during these live events. They really know how to please an audience. So I enjoyed it thoroughly. As always, let me know what you guys thought. Leave your comments down below in the video. If you're watching this, but if you're listening via the podcast, go ahead and let us know on Twitter. We are at Tech News Gadget. All right, next article we got lined up for you is, well, Apple is in advanced talks right now to buy Intel's smartphone modem chip business. Not just the regular one, the 5G one, which is actually kind of interesting. Apple Inc. is in advanced talks to buy Intel Corp's smartphone modem chip business, according to people familiar with the matter, a move that would jumpstart the iPhone maker's push to take control of developing the critical components powering its devices. A deal covering a portfolio of patents and staff valued at $1 billion or more could be reached in the next week, the people said, assuming the talks don't fall apart. So it's still borderline on it. Though the potential acquisition price would be a rounding error for companies valued in the hundreds of billions of dollars, a transaction would be important strategically and financially. You see, if it does go through, it would give Apple access to engineering work and talent behind Intel's years-long push to develop modem chips for the crucial next generation of wireless tech known as 5G, potentially shaving years of development work off of their current process. Apple has been working globally to develop chips to further differentiate its devices as smartphone sales are kind of plateauing all over the place, squeezing the iPhone business that has long underpinned its profit. It has hired engineers, including some from Intel, announced plans for an office of 1,200 employees in San Diego. For Intel's part, a deal would allow the company to shed a business that has been weighing on its bottom line. The smartphone operation has been losing about $1 billion annually. A person familiar with its performance has said, and has generally failed to live up to expectations. Though it would exit the smartphone business, Intel does plan to continue to work on 5G technology for other connected devices. And in case you didn't know this, Intel and Apple had been in off-again, on-again talks for about a year. They broke down around the time Apple reached a multi-year supply agreement for modems with Qualcomm. And then they cast a wider net for buyers and received expressions of interest from a number of parties. But then the talks with Apple's, seen as the obvious buyer, obviously resumed. So, yeah, seeing as how that has finally, I guess, figured itself out, I guess this bodes well for Apple. Maybe not so much for Intel, but it's beneficial for Intel because they wanted to get rid of it anyways. And might as well just sell it off to somebody who can make better use of it. So there you go. There's that news. Ooh, we should probably move on. I got some interesting gadget news for you guys. Starting with the Asus ROG Phone 2. Look at this juicy phone. Looks a lot like the ROG Phone 1, right? And I've covered the ROG before. This one is featuring a 120Hz display, a new SoC, and a giant 600. Ooh, with an extra zero, making it 6,000 mAh battery. Well, Asus is still trying to make gaming phones a thing with the release of the Asus ROG Republic of Gamers Phone 2. Just like last year's model, this is a high-end smartphone with a hyper-aggressive gamer design and a light-up back logo, but there are also genuinely impressive specs this time around. Let me just tell you. It's the first device to launch with Qualcomm's new Snapdragon 855 Plus SoC. Plus is a mid-cycle upgrade for the Snapdragon 855 with higher clocking speeds for the CPU and the GPU. See, the single prime CPU core gets bumped from 2.84 GHz to 2.96 GHz, while the GPU gets a 15% boost from 585 MHz to 672. And you're going to need that extra horsepower, obviously. The ROG Phone 2 has a 6.59 inch 2340 by 1080 OLED display with a 120 Hz refresh rate, which is up from the 90 Hz last year's phone. This is one of the fastest displays you can get on a smartphone anywhere currently, period. Alongside the 120 Hz display on the Razer Phone 2, though that one is an LCD, this one is OLED. The 90Hz display on the OnePlus 7 Pro turned out to be one of the phone's best features, even when you weren't gaming, thanks to the faster, smoother UI animations it enabled. Expect faster displays to show up in many more smartphones next year. The third headline feature to point out about this is the 6,000 mAh battery, which is absolutely massive compared to the batteries in most flagship phones currently on the market. The Galaxy S10 Plus, which we covered, has a mere 4,100 mAh battery, and the OnePlus 7 Pro is only 4,000. Hopefully we're looking at a long runtime on this one. Other specs include a massive 12 gigs of RAM, options for 128 gigs of 512 gigabytes of storage, two USB-C ports, a 3.5 millimeter headphone jack, dual front-facing speakers, a 24 megapixel front camera, and dual rear cameras featuring a 48 megapixel main camera and a 13 megapixel wide angle. There's also an in-screen fingerprint reader, but no wireless charging, SD slot, or water resistance. Besides the usual display and SoC improvements, there are some actual gaming-centric features on this phone that you won't find on other smartphones. The second USB port lives on the side of the phone, which is great for charging the device during a landscape gaming session without the cord getting in the way of your hands. There's also a few phones with pressure-sensitive sensors in them, and Asus is using it on this one for shoulder buttons that exist on the left and right side of the phone in landscape. Next to the USB port on the side is what Asus only calls a proprietary connector, and the two ports team up to power a range of accessories from Asus. The clip-on cooling fan returns and comes bundled with the phone. A new ROG Kunai gamepad looks like an edgy version of a Nintendo Switch controller with two controller halves that can be held individually, slid into a controller mount, or connected to the side of the phone with a special case. Oh yeah, look at that. Obviously, this is sold separately, but... Man. So this is, Yeah, let's just say you have a 1.4-pound handheld gaming system, and boy, does it look juicy. I mean, look at this one. I mean, the ROG Phone 1 was, like, pretty impressive phone for starters, but the 2 just was like, hey, big brother, check it out. I'm going to kick you out, and I'm running the house now. And he went and fell off down the stairs, and he went, oh, fine, see if I care, and ran off crying. So, yeah, quite impressive. Pricing-wise, because I know you guys are going to ask, Asus hasn't posted official availability or pricing, but a report from Engadget says the phone will launch in Taiwan on August 1st for $870. Now, if you want to get the Twin View dock, which is the gaming controller dock thing that makes it look cooler, that is $230, and a Nintendo Switch-like gamepad is $130. So, pretty impressive, right? Are you guys excited? I mean, just look at this phone. I mean, we're looking at a couple pictures of it now. Yes, that backup, the logo on the back, it glows. Oh, yeah. It looks awesome. On the side, bottom. I mean, if you want phones worth drooling over, you actually seriously sit here and compete and you go, do I want a gaming phone and a regular computer, or do I want, like, a regular phone but a heck of awesome desktop computer for gaming? I don't know, but this one for $870 is actually kind of within the reasonable. I don't know. We'll see. Post your thoughts in the comments down below. All right, we got more gadget news. Omega is unveiling a moonwatch that could be the best looking Speedmaster ever. Now, for those of you who don't know and you're like, what are you doing looking at a watch? There's nothing cool about this one. Keep this in mind. Omega, 50 years ago, came out with a watch that went with the astronauts on Apollo 11 to the moon and back. And if I'm making that up, it went to space and came back in maybe a different mission. I didn't exactly go to double check this for myself, but yeah, this is one of the watches. This is a company that sent a watch to the moon. So this is kind of what cemented Omega for, like, a quality watchmaker. If you can go up in space and come back and the watch is still working, hats off to you. You figured out how to make an indestructible watch. Speaking of indestructible, 50 years ago, man first landed on the moon. To coincide with this milestone in space exploration, Omega, the first watch to ever reach the moon on the wrists of Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, see, it was confirmed right there in the first paragraph. I didn't read it. Just making sure you guys are paying attention, have released a brand new Speedmaster moonwatch. And this one is a stunner. I mean, look at it. Oh. This is a watch, guys, but, oh, man. Mechanics, I understand. You're all like, it's a digital show, what the heck? We wouldn't have had digital if mechanical had never been part of it in the first place. So keep in mind, these are all steps to... Anyways, set in a 42mm brushed and polished case from a special platinum alloy with the use of gold, the new Speedmaster Moonwatch employs the original caliber 321 movement used in the very first Omega Speedmaster back in 1957. It's a serious throwback, but completely warranted given the movement was used in a variety of spacebound models, including the Speedmaster ST-105.003, the model tested and qualified by NASA and worn by astronaut Ed White during the first American spacewalk, and the Speedmaster ST-105.012, which was the first watch worn on the moon on the 21st of July 1969. After extensive research and reconstruction in a dedicated workshop, the Caliber 321 has now been reborn, in line with its original specifications, albeit in a striking new case and dial design. The step dial is formed from onyx with a deep black color that works in perfect harmony with the other three materials, including 8K white gold for the indexes and hands. Further exploring reveals the three meteorite subdials, which is a tribute to the Speedmaster's illustrious lunar history. These subdials are made from real slices of moon meteorite, providing a genuine link to the Caliber 321, which has powered every Speedmaster ever worn on the moon. So the whole watch wouldn't be complete without a sapphire crystal case back to view the reconstructed Calibre in all of its glory. Finishing off the watch is a classic black leather strap with a platinum buckle. Oh man, I mean, just look at this watch. It looks awesome. So yeah, specifications, functions, it works hours, minutes, seconds, three chronograph, subdials, power reserve, 44 hour, strap, black leather strap with a platinum buckle. And so they'll be unveiling that, as far as I know. Pricing wise, well, I probably have to go take a look. But yeah, the Omega is out there. That moon watch. I mean, look at that watch. I mean, think of it this way. If we never got to the point of being able to make mechanical systems, we would have never got to the point to being able to make digital systems and everything else that has been. It's kind of a progressive evolution, as it were, in terms of technology and what we're using. As you watch it go out from mechanical to digital to,
oh man, what the heck, look at all this stuff, it's kind of cool, right?
Right. Well, now you're informed. All right, moving on to another watch. This one's a digital watch. So for those of you who like the walkie-talkie feature in the Apple Watch, Apple is bringing that back in iOS 12.4 update. Apple is today rolling out software updates across iOS, watchOS, and the HomePod as it prepares for a much bigger release with new features coming this fall. The iOS 12.4 release introduces a new iPhone migration option that introduces the ability to wirelessly transfer data and migrate directly from an old iPhone to a new iPhone during setup, according to release notes. Now, in case you didn't know, Apple has already offered a wireless transfer option between iOS devices, but it relies on iCloud for just about everything. New method transfers a lot of content, meaning app data, device settings, photos, etc., directly from iPhone to iPhone. Apps must still be downloaded from the App Store after the migration step is complete. However, one significant thing is that passwords are now included in the data transferred from an old iPhone to the new one. Previously, passwords weren't saved as part of iCloud backups for security and privacy reasons. But obviously they wanted to come up with another option that didn't require a computer being involved. And they also improved the Apple News Plus browser by making it easier to access all participating publications at the top of the News Plus section. Apple says today's updates included a security fix that re-enables the walkie-talkie feature on the Apple Watch, which was briefly taken offline after they found a vulnerability in it and had the potential to allow someone to secretly listen in on another person's iPhone without consent. So they haven't seen anybody taking advantage of the exploit before it was reported. They looked into it more and figured out patch the vulnerability. We should be back and good to go. The latest Watch OS update, version 5.3, also further expands support for the Apple Watch's EKG feature and regular heartbeat detection to Canada and Singapore. And last, Apple says its HomePod smart speaker should now work in Japan and Taiwan. So there you go. You can finally use your walkie-talkie feature, just like you always wanted. Alright, moving on to some gaming news. This came out today on USAtoday.com. I figured I just had to cover it, just for the sake of covering it. The title is, "Was Fortnite Just a Fad? The Game's Decline Might Be Hurting Microsoft's Business." Well, and then they go on to talk about some, I guess, interesting stuff, but Microsoft impressed investors last week with solid numbers for its fourth quarter. Its revenue and adjusted earnings rose 12 and 21% respectively, buoyed by the growth of its commercial cloud business, which grew its revenue 39% annually and accounted for nearly a third of its top line. However, then the gaming business for Microsoft is, a bit of a soft spot. It posted a 10% annual decline in revenue. Missed expectations. Xbox hardware sales plunged 48% annually, and Xbox software and service sales slid 3%. Obviously, for obvious reasons, in case you needed to recap, the Xbox One is nearly 6 years old. Gamers are anticipating new consoles next year, so why would you buy this year? Soft sales of video games are also expected due to a lack of major game releases during the quarter. However, this is interesting to note, Microsoft also noted that it faced a tough comparable, air quotes, from lower sales of an unnamed third-party title. Well, Nyko Partners analyst Daniel Ahmad claimed that title was Epic Games' Fortnite, and that gamers are spending significantly less cash in a free-to-play game. So, how is Fortnite's decline affecting Microsoft? Will this weigh down its gaming revenue in 2020? Are gamers losing interest in Fortnite? Well, keep in mind, Fortnite launched 2 years ago, currently available on Windows, macOS, iOS, Android, PS4, Xbox One, and the Nintendo Switch. The game has three main modes: a shooter survival, battle royale, and a creative mode. Fortnite generates revenue by selling V-Bucks, obviously an in-game currency. It generated $2.4 billion in revenue in 2018, according to Superdata, making it the year's highest grossing free-to-play game with over 200 million players worldwide. But 2019, you see, has been a much tougher year for Fortnite so far. Revenue fell 48% month over month across all platforms in January, according to Superdata. The firm also recently, The firm also recently claimed Fortnite generated $203 million in revenue in May, marking a 38% drop from a year earlier. Newzoo also recently reported that Fortnite continues to lose viewers on Twitch. As a result, Tencent's Riot Games, the publisher of League of Legends, overtook Epic as the most watched publisher on Twitch in the second quarter. Newzoo still ranks Fortnite as the fifth most popular core PC game worldwide, but it clearly peaked as it faced tougher competition from similar games like EA's Apex Legends and Activision Blizzard's Call of Duty Black Ops 4. It's also facing competition from games like PUBG Mobile and NetEase's Knives Out. So what does Fortnite's decline mean for Microsoft? Well, Microsoft and other platform operators typically retain a cut, usually about 30% of Fortnite's revenue, with a few major exceptions. Epic avoided paying Google that cut by directing Android users to download the app from its website instead of Google Play, and applied the same strategy on Windows and Mac by launching its Epic Game Store last December. Microsoft still controls its Xbox gaming ecosystem as a walled garden, so it's likely still generating a full slice of Xbox's, Fortnite revenue on Xbox consoles. Can't quantify exactly the value of Fortnite for Microsoft without knowing the exact number of Fortnite gamers on Microsoft, their spending partners, and its cut of the gamers' revenue, but its earnings report and Ahmad's comments indicate that the game's decline was significant enough to dent, ironically, Microsoft's gaming business. On the bright side, Microsoft noted it's partly offset its weaker software sales with higher sales of Xbox Live and the Game Pass subscriptions. Obviously, with the boost that happened not too long ago, which, you know, because they're changing some systems and things behind the line. As for the bottom line, won't know how much revenue Microsoft's gaming unit generated in 2019 until it files its report and releases it in August, but it generated 9% of the tech giant's revenue in 2018. So obviously it's firing on all cylinders with Azure, Office 365, Dynamics 365, and they're also working on xCloud gaming and streaming. So expect it to warm up in the second half of fiscal 2020 as it works through the tough year-over-year comparison. So it could just roar into a growth engine again, seeing as how the xCloud gaming service works out. I swear I have something in my eye. It's like a hair or something. It's driving me nuts. You're probably like, it's right there. Did you get it? I'm sorry. When there's something in my... I can't just ignore it. Why ignore it? I mean, I know what I probably should do, but it's annoying. I gotta get it out. So, speaking of what I gotta get out, we got one more story for you guys. I know for those of you who've been hanging on for the last piece of news, Overwatch, new hero. His name? Sigma. Well, go ahead, you have to use this other guy's name. Anyways, let's read the article, shall we? By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we have a podcast available if you want to listen on the go. If you're listening to the podcast, head on over to youtube.com/technewsgadget if you want to see the video that goes along with this. As always, show notes, videos, subscriptions, everything can be found at technewsgadget.net. So, with the article, Sigma versus Sigma, the comparison we had to make. A new hero is coming to Overwatch, a robot suit wearing evil scientist named Sigma. His chunky robo bod and nefarious allusions to power and control raise an important question, at least here at Kotaku, who wrote the article. Is this the same Sigma from Mega Man X? Interesting. In order to determine if Sigma is that Sigma, it's important to cross-reference everything we know about the two villains. At a bare minimum, based on looks and evilness alone, I'm going to estimate that Overwatch's Sigma has at least a 33% chance of being Mega Man X's Sigma. Here's what we know so far, and Kotaku goes on to say, the Overwatch world's Sigma is a scientist who experimented with gravity and black holes until an experiment went wrong and somehow addled his mind, filling it to the brim with the secrets of the universe. He's got two things going on. He's really good at math, first off, and appears to be able to control gravity at, well, whim. Judging by his lab coat, he might have been working at the same facility as the healing class villain Moira. Regardless, Sigma is a force of destruction, albeit one who is apparently unaware that villains like the Talon Organization are using him for evil. Big robot suit? Check. Megalomaniacal thoughts? Check. The ability to control fundamental powers of the universe that affect other beings? Also check. Meanwhile, over in the Mega Man X continuity, Sigma was the leader of the Maverick Hunters, a group of robots called Reploids that acted a bit like Blade Runners, hunting down rogue robots. At some point, he was infected with the aptly named Sigma Virus, which deteriorated his mind and caused him to lead a massive robot revolt. Sigma is a bit of a pest, to say the least, since he's able to leap in new robot bodies and other computer systems thanks to being part virus. In terms of comparisons to Overwatch's Sigma, if messing with gravity gave Sigma the power to screw with physical reality, all of Mega Man X's Sigma's virus shenanigans give him similar powers within a digital space. Not while it's arguable how much control he has over his actions due to the virus's corruption, he's definitely a bit more consciously evil than Overwatch's Sigma. Now, let's break it down and come up with a totally scientific rubric for determining how likely it is that Sigma's Overwatch, or Sigma on Overwatch, is the Reploid Sigma. Here are the similarities. Both of the Sigmas started off as mostly good guys. Each fell prey to a disaster that altered their perceptions of the world around them. These disasters gave them the ability to do weird, pseudo-scientific kind of magic stuff. Both Sigmas wear hard robo-looking core armor. They are both evil to varying degrees. The Reploid Sigma can teleport, which is maybe a gravity-related power? Now, the normal laws of the world, digital or physics, don't really apply to either Sigmas, and they're both named Sigma. Well, looking at this and deciding that each bullet point is worth 11%, it seems 88% likely that Sigma and Sigma are the same Sigma. There's a marked increase from the estimated 33% chance. Well, what do you think? Is this the Sigma from Overwatch, Mega Man? Is this the new Sigma? I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts. As always, is he going to be a character you plan on playing, maining, maybe using as an off-tank? Let me know down in the comment section. I might test him out. I don't know. I got to figure out what he does and how he would match up with everybody else. I'm kind of content with the three or four characters that I play currently, but you never know. I might be opening more. And with that, that wraps up this episode of the Latest in Tech News. Thanks for tuning in, guys. New episodes every weekday. The Latest in Tech News can be found on every major platform, including Apple, Spotify, Google, YouTube, Stitcher, Overcast, and more. Now, if you enjoyed this episode, be sure to let us know by clicking that like button and by leaving a comment. If you're listening via the podcast, be sure to go leave a review for us out on Apple Podcasts or wherever you happen to be listening. That would be greatly appreciated. Also, double check that you are subscribed so that you don't miss the next episode. I'm your host, Taylor American. Remember, for the latest in tech, gadget, and gaming news, visit technewsgadget.net. Pretty much keeping awesome, guys. I'll see you on the flip side.